life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is Extraordinary Lives, a podcast from Lad Bible where we speak to people with a unique story to tell. I'm Ben Powell Jones, and coming up in this episode...
So I'm now trying to sort of jump, and I thought, I ain't even going to get out of the way quick enough. What am I going to do? And this case is coming down to go like that. In slow motion, it's going... I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get me in the forehead. Oh, no. Right, then he's going down and start in the heart. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get me, I'm going to get done in the heart. And then he's going, oh, no, I'm going to get in the... I'm going to be getting the... And then I thought, jump over the car, Dave. Look, I don't know why. Yeah, jump. So I tried to jump, and then as I went to jump up, he went, poof, and got me in the leg.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Extraordinary Lives, the podcast from Lad Bible. I'm Ben Powell Jones, and in the studio today, we've got the larger-than-life Dave Courtney. Thanks so much for being here, Dave.
My pleasure, sir, truly.
For anyone who isn't aware of who you are, could you give us a brief introduction?
No, I'm not going to tell you. Hi, I'm Dave Courtney. I come from South London. I was propelled into infamy by really a documentary that was done early on in the late 70s, I think, or the early 80s, called Bermondsey Boy, which portrayed me as a debt collector, car repossession, rent a clump, get squatters out, you know, an all-round for-hire thug. I was on the way to prison, and it was a documentary done to... they got permission from the Home Office to film me in prison, and they done it to see if prison worked. I was on bail. I was definitely going to prison, and they was going to follow me while I was in prison, what happened when I come out, whether my friends and family stayed low, or whether prison had worked. And the job at the time I was doing was I was a doorman, and I had a lot of doormen working for me, so... they looked at it as a gang, a firm, and they wanted to see what happened when a gang boss went to prison and if everyone stayed low. And that was the format of the documentary. But I actually, happily for me, got found not guilty. And before they done the court case, they filmed me doing all these dastardly deeds to show how bad I was before I went in. And then when I came out to see if prison had worked, well, I got not guilty, and that was the end of the documentary. So I had to make a documentary just to have all the horrible things I'd done in the beginning. And that propelled me into the naughty boy world of stardom. So I'm infamous for being a little bit of everything.
Okay. A little bit of everything. A great way to describe it, and I'm excited to hear what that means. So why don't we go back to the beginning? You know, what were you like as a kid? What was growing up like for you?
I was about that big.
Okay. Yeah,
pick my nose. Yeah, weed on the seat. I was the same as any other kid. I'm genuinely walking, talking, living proof that you can't blame the parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived in a nice area, a nice house. I had a perfect mum and dad. They were Cub and Scout leaders. You know, I had no reason whatsoever to turn out the way I did. It's in your genes. Yeah, you are born naughty. Make no mistake with that. You cannot put it down to a... There was no green areas to play on. My mum and dad, I was a one-parent family. You know, they might have little nudging influences to help you go a certain way, but you are born naughty, I'm afraid. I'm proof of that.
Mm. Did you have siblings, brothers or sisters?
I had one brother, one sister. They are, and once again, living proof that I was the odd one out. You know, I'm quite close to my family. You know, I'm quite close to my mum, who's still alive. 90-odd. Love you, Mum. Yeah, I'm quite very close to my mum. And my sister, I've got an estranged brother at the moment.
But you were the one. Would it be fair to call you a black sheep?
It's a horrible word for a nice thing. I was quite happy being the black sheep. Yeah. You know, I enjoyed life. My main ambition from the minute I open my eyes in the morning till when I shut my eyes is to smile and giggle and laugh and have everyone around me under my little umbrella on the same buzz as me. And I'm afraid it was really naughtiness I was looking at, you know, money-making things. I didn't look at it as crime. I didn't look at myself as a professional criminal from the age of 10. You know what I mean? I didn't look at it. But in reality, I was. I most probably had ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And, you know, once you've been to prison and seen all the people, the different categories of people that are in prison, most of them people had ADHD or...
ADHD or...
And autistic.
Oh, right.
Thank you. Cool, your brain's still working, even though you're looking at him. That's good, that is. Pretty good. That's good, you ain't fell asleep. I like that. So I've been to prison, and I've seen all the different categories of prisoners there, and no one actually understood autism or ADHD years and years and years ago. It isn't something that's just been invented. It's always been there, and there's an awful lot of prisoners that the authorities would call re-offenders. They've actually just got ADHD or autism. And they are conditions that you have to get under control by a certain age. Like no other illness in the world, you have to get hold of that by a certain age, because up to that certain age, 18, it's classed as an illness and bad behaviour. And after your 18th birthday, it's prisonable. So you've got to start mending it before then. Because after that, you're going to go to prison every time you have a little attack of autism or ADHD. You're going to prison for it. You don't get told off, sent into another class, given another tablet. Right? You're banged up. And there it is. All the prisons are full of all these people with something that no one actually knew existed. So they put it under the label of, you know, a re-offender.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I'm actually a patron of an autistic charity, AIM. And I do all the speaking for ADHD. So I'm a firm believer in that is half of the criminal element. And I truly believe I had it myself.
And when you say that you were naughty, you were born naughty, what did naughtiness look like at a young age?
Naughtiness looked like anything that was going to put a pound note in my pocket really without hurting anyone. And whatever it was that made everybody laugh and turned me into centre of attraction. And because of my... I hate to say this about looking like a cocky but there is such a thing as natural leader material. There is, and natural soldiers. And each one is the same importance to each other. A natural leader needs a good soldier, and a good soldier needs a good leader. And I had that. Yeah, I had that among men. I didn't mind the buck stopping here. I'm not short of a few words when I need to get myself into or out of trouble. Yeah, I can mend an awful lot more things with my tongue than I can with that. You know, and have done for many years for bigger and better people than me. So it propelled me into a position of importance, being very good with my mouth, really.
So let's look at the process of growing up. Like, because by the time the documentary was made that you mentioned earlier...
I was already well set in my ways.
Right, and how old were you then when they made that documentary?
23, 24. 23,
okay.
I'd already been in prison once for attempted murder. To attempted murder, I went to prison for 3 years at 21.
Okay, so that by the point that's made, you said that you know, in that you're seen, you know, rent a clump, as you put it, which I mean, I assume
rent a clump, get a good hiding from pay,
debt collection, all the things,
car repossession,
all those things,
throwing squatters out.
So, how does that work? Like, how do you go from a 10-year-old who's, you know, nicking the odd quid here and there and making people laugh and that sort of thing? What's your progression into all those things that you've just described?
I can't really put my finger on one thing, but my choice, as most people do in my position now, you'll find a familiarity with their choice of company was an awful lot older than them.
Right.
Yeah, my choice of companions were an awful lot older than them, and the reason they put up with a silly little one like me is I was funny. yeah, I'll do it, I'll get in, I'll go. You know, and I was good company, so I was gifted at making people laugh, I feel. And I was also gifted when I was a young man at being able to hold my hands up. I was pretty good at having a fight, which falsely made me think I'd be a good boxer, but I found out very quickly that I wasn't.
Really? Did I hear you?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
All right. I don't want to talk about it. We'll flip over that part of my life.
But I think I heard you talk before about Lenny McLean. Yeah. Did you get in the ring with him at a very young age? Is that correct?
What? You can leave this in if you want. What a tosser you are.
Me? Why am I a tosser?
Yes, I did get in the ring with Lenny McLean, and I will now have to bring this story up.
I mean, you were younger.
I most certainly would have flitted round, but I will have to bring this story up. I was training to be boxing it. That's what you was. Honestly, you were closer.
It's a good story.
Yeah, of course, good. Anyway, thank you. I was actually training at the time, boxing, where I got all of my most of my doorman from. And I was training on Sunday morning up at the Thompson Beckett in the Elkett Road. And Lenny McLean, you know, all hail, the best walking, talking nightclub door fighter I have ever seen in my life. That you could never replicate, and there can never be another one like that. Came into the ring, and his sparring partner didn't turn up when he was training. He was a giant of a man, giant of a man. I had the best kit. That's about it. And he was sparring, and he went, "Well, first you spar with me then." And no one said anything, and I thought, wow, he can't really hurt me, because it's only sparring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my mental thinking, yeah, a little bit wrong. And I could do 3 rounds with Lenny McLean. I'll hold that close to my heart for the rest of my life, you know. I mean, I got in the ring with Lenny. Even if he hit me, I'm glad he hit me. I'll put a magic mark around the bot, you know what I mean? It was a hard man with such a fearsome reputation the whole country knew of. Yeah, which there isn't anyone else like that anymore. There isn't any doorman in England that everyone in England knows and is in fear of their set. There isn't anyone. The times have changed. I said, "I'll have a spar with you, Len." He went, "Oh, you've got someone to sit on your shoulders then?" You know, 'cause he's a big old up.
How old were you at this point?
9. No, I suppose I'm about...
I did believe you.
I suppose I'm about... 24, something like that. 20, you know, it's still a baby.
Yeah.
I didn't have sideburns yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he was a proper man. Sideburns, the full lot, right? So, you know, fighting went well, and I got in the ring with him, and I wasn't ever so frightened because it's sparring. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all people skipping and round the boxing ring, and he got in looking pretty casual. And, you know, there's different styles of fighting. Like, there's different styles of football, like the long ball game or the dribbling. You know, there's a Nigel Benn that didn't mind getting it as long as he got his one in. There's a Eubanks that wanted to hit you but didn't actually want to get it yourself. There's the Bruce Lee that spin round to bury his ankle in your ear hole. There's the Mick McManus's that grapple you up. You know, there's a footballer that's going to rip his shirt off and dive into 500 blows. Wah! You know, there's all different ones, isn't there? Lenny McLean, sorry. Lenny McLean went ding, ding, and just before we both moved, this is the God's honest truth, he just went, and I just, if I had any in me, it would have been on, I could not move. I just instantly, big bubbles of sweat come up, instantly, my head was down to my legs, run, get out. My legs were going, and I just stood there looking at this thing, and he didn't run across the ring, so he just walked with big steps like a monster and swung his arm round, and I just he was like He-Man, like, I just couldn't get my head round it, making all these noises and spit and the veins. I just went like that, thinking, I'll do it as hard as I could, and he just swung his big right hand, that hand punched me in the mouth, and I woke up with fucking smelling sauce. So I did, but thank you for making me bring this up. I did actually last 17 seconds with Lenny McLean, right, but okay. 10 of them was going one. And I thought, I'm going to knock this boxing on the head. You know, I'll retire from the fight game.
Fair enough. Well, you know, you got in a ring with Lenny McLean. It's still an accolade. Yeah, not many people would say that.
No, I didn't intend to say that either.
Well, how did that... Because he was famous for being a doorman, right?
Yeah.
Were you a doorman at that point too?
I was a doorman at that time, yeah. Listen, at that time, doorman were a completely different thing than they are now. Please believe me. Doorman was someone that, if he lost a fight that night, the governor sacked him and got a better fighter.
Right.
Right. Nowadays, you know, if you hit somebody back, you're actually sacked. So they've got your name, address, blood group, photograph, and the governor has to bring you to the police station and you're sacked.
Mm.
And you've got 25 doormen working one club. When I worked the Hippodrome, there was 5 doormen and it had 2,000 people in it. You had 3 on the front, 1 inside upstairs with his 1,000 and 1 downstairs on his own with his 1,000. No walkie-talkies going, trouble at exit number 5, need some assistance. There's none of that. You went, help me! And done your thing, right?
So was it back then, was the job, was a lot of it just fighting?
It was all fighting. Right, it was all fighting. There was football hooligans. There was 20,000 Newcastle come to London to play Chelsea, 20,000 Man United come to London to play Arsenal, 20,000 Liverpool blokes come down to play Crystal Palace, and only half of them went home on a Saturday night. So in Leicester Square, there's 80,000 Northerners wanting to have a fight with some soft Southern bastard, and there's you three sitting there with fucking bow ties on going, oh, no. Right, you know, for the whole football. So you had to be...
All right, who's ready for another cocktail?
Yes, please. Whatever that last one was, it was incredible.
That was a Bartesian margarita. Bright, smooth, perfectly balanced. You'd swear it came from a bar.
That came from the Bartesian cocktail maker?
Yep, pop in a capsule, press a button, and boom. Bar quality cocktails at home. My friend swore by it, so I finally got one.
I tried the old-fashioned earlier. Honestly, it's the best I've had outside an actual bar.
Right? Over 60 craft cocktail options, ready in under 30 seconds.
And Bartesian's running their biggest holiday deal. Up to $150 off cocktail makers right now.
Wait, up to $150? That's huge.
Exactly. Holiday hosting just got way easier.
Make your holiday gatherings unforgettable with Bartesian, the cocktail maker that crafts smooth, bar-quality drinks at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. The biggest savings of the year end December 2nd. Don't miss out. Order now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
F***ing good at it, and he become very good at it. And the reason there will never, ever be another Lenny McLean, the reason there can't be, is fighting is the same as any other sport in the world. Right? You can't get good at something unless you do it a lot.
Mm.
Right? And Lenny McLean had 4 or 5 fights a night, 5 nights a week for 25 years.
God.
So by the time me and you bumped into him half pissed on the way out of a club on the way home, he'd eat 8 of us. Yeah, you can't get good at something. If you hit somebody back now once, you get sacked. Mm. So how the fuck are you supposed to be good at something you're not allowed to do?
Okay.
Yeah, so you'll never ever, I'm sorry to all the doormen out there now, big respect and all that. Yeah, but you'll never ever be allowed to be that good. Yeah, you know, they can be that big. You know, they weren't, bodybuilding weren't such a big thing when I was a young man, but there were some big ones around. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm. So, Dave, you started off working the doors in your 20s, and you've just explained how back then, I guess before CCTV and the rules they have now, a lot of it was involved with violence. Were you not intimidated by that?
No, I'm not that I'm incredibly brave, but people are built different. Some people can go mountain climbing and not get frightened. Some people can drive 500 mile an hour on a motorbike and bend a, they're not frightened. And other people can have a fight and they're not frightened. And once you've had a few hidings and realise that you can get a good kicking and in 2 weeks you're back to normal. You know, you're not frightened of it no more. People who haven't had, who hasn't done it much would be frightened of it. Like the very first time someone jumps out and points a gun at you, it's terrifying. But if you're in a world where that happens quite a lot, you know, you can afford to, after the eighth time, you're actually going, well, what? You know what I mean? I've got some funny stories where they've pulled out guns at me. I've also got some that are not funny because I've got f***ing holes in my leg. But I've got some very funnies of, you know.
Right.
But no, I was intimidated by the violence. It actually, not I enjoyed the violence, it brought out another part of leadership for me, yeah? When everyone else started getting into the panic mode, I turned into Dave Courtney. I always thought it was like I was almost sitting here getting filmed, yeah? It brought out, as everyone else melted, if someone came in the room, it helped me grow into this is my bit.
And were you not, I suspect this might be a stupid question, but did you have, were you not, did you feel any guilt about hurting people or any worries about hurting people that you were fighting with?
No, I didn't feel any guilt with the violence bit because in my heart I had my Robin Hood on and I never bullied or picked on or started anything with anyone, ever, because I'm the one in charge and I take that one on board very seriously, and I could never have a pop at any of my doormen for getting carried away with their little selves and being a little bit bullish if I was that way myself. Right, I sacrificed the pleasure of being able to walk around like that because I wanted to tell other people up for it. Right, I sacrificed me being on Charlie and having a really good time, you know, because it made you into a dick. Yeah, and I've had a lot of people around me that I looked at like that, but that little packet there turned them into something that, yeah, so I've had to forfeit and I've sacrificed to be in charge. Right, and I took it on board very, very seriously, and I've never felt guilt of whatever I've had to do, yeah? I've never felt guilt. I have been in a million positions where, I'm lying. I've seen a million positions where they thought they'd done enough to someone, and as soon as they've got up, this person got up and stabbed them in the back, more or less, or jumped up and carried on doing something. So when I've had a fight, I've made sure they was definitely finished. Yeah, the fact that they have decided to stop hitting me doesn't necessarily mean I've decided to stop hitting them. Yeah, so my reputation might be that I have been a little bit seriously over the top sometimes, yeah? But I would rather you say that about me than come and visit me in hospital, yeah? You know, I'm not a great fan of carrying knives, or I believe in you must be prepared to do the prison sentence that your choice of weapon carries. Right, and if you decide to carry a knife with you 24 hours a day and it turns habitual, it turns into a habit, you can halfway go somewhere, forgot you've got your knife and then go home to get it because you just can't do it without it. And a knife being something, if you haven't stabbed anybody before, please believe me, you know, if you're going to start cheating and use a weapon anyway, just one stab doesn't stop anyone. If you're going to use a tool, you need something to go boom and it all stops and you win. That's what you need, yeah? And a knuckle duster, I'm afraid, is the only thing that does that. Right? If one pull out a knife and save your life and do that to someone, they don't stop. They still carry on running forward. It feels like a half-decent punch. That's what a knife does. So to stop them, you have to do that. Right? And then when you go to court for murder and you'll say, it was just self-defence, I didn't want to do nothing. And I say, well, you stabbed him 13 times. How's that self-defence? It doesn't stop. I'm afraid a knuckle duster is the only thing that stops them instantly. And you don't go to prison for years and years for it. Now that...
Right, just for any audio listeners, Dave's just produced a diamond-encrusted knuckle duster from his pocket.
A diamond-encrusted knuckle duster.
Wow, okay.
And putting it on was the very first time I had a premature ejaculation.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that, but it's the truth. It's a more important invention than the wheel, fire and electricity for someone that's out there having to carry a tool to work, like policemen, prison officers, doormen, soldiers. There is an awful lot of people out there that do carry something to work. And that stops the fight instantly. You've only got to get one shot going that way. And if it hits them, right, they will, if they catch them on the arm, it'll break their arm. If you hit them on the chest, it'll break their ribs. Hit them around here, they drop on the floor. And I would rather take the risk of getting 18 months every time I have a fight than risk getting 25 years.
Mm.
And I was involved in a world where fighting was something I had to do two or three times a night, whether I wanted to or not.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't up to me. I'm saying, sorry, you lot can't come in without, you know, you've got trainers on and it's nine of you and you've got to come in with girlfriends. You can't come in. And if they've decided they're coming in, you had to have a fight on the door.
Mm.
All right? Then it went into a different world where the ease and all that came into it. So the doorman was actually running the drug scene in most clubs.
Right.
Yeah, and taking over your door was worth 10 grand a night to some other little firm. So then you had to start fighting seriously, employ more doormen, have one in there with a thing.
Oh, right. So you'd have like rival doormen having basically wars over.
Of course,
over
yeah. Whoever was running the door in that club sold the pills in that club. If that club had 1,000 people in it, you were selling 2,000 pills in there at £20 each.
Mm.
Right? That's worth killing someone for. That's 1,000. Doormen only earned £100 a night when you first started. If you was now letting certain dealers in there sell and then throwing out every other one so they sold more, you know, you could get a little £500 bonuses each every single night.
Mm.
Or you could be buying them and putting your own dealers in and earning thousands of pounds a night and making sure that the police realised that you was good doorman because you were throwing out every other dealer. So you was looking like you was doing your job correctly. So whoever was running that door then, you know, if you decided to go in and smash out of all them doormen and now you're the new doorman, you was earning the 10, 15 grand a night and the club's open four nights a week.
And how do you become, so because am I right in thinking you were, I don't know what the description is, but you ran a group of doormen, didn't you?
I ran most of the doormen in London at one stage.
Right. So how do you get to that position? Like, did you start as a doorman yourself?
I started as a doorman myself and then I started working for other doormen. So you meet, you know, if you're a footballer, you know all the other footballers. Mm-hmm. If you're a prostitute, you know many prostitutes. Mm-hmm. If you're a bodybuilder, you know many bodybuilders. If you're an heroin addict, you know many heroin addicts. Mm-hmm. And I was a doorman for a long time, so I know a million doormen. I'm also, my lady was Jamaican. So half or most of my friends were black guys. You understand what I mean? I come from South London out there more than natural. I've got my own mixed race children. So that was a real bonus for me that I had another million odd guys that were prepared to work for me.
I see.
As a little white London skinhead, that they weren't everyone else.
Right, I see.
You know, I had an instant couple of hundred more on my side or a couple of thousand more on my side up and down the country than everyone else did. Everyone needs someone to be in charge, and being involved in my firm, it made your firm bigger. I could now get an awful lot of things done up and down the country by not having to go myself, and they could get a lot of things done up and down the country without them coming down here. What I actually became was a job centre for very naughty men up and down the country.
Mm.
Right? You might not, you know, doormen are only doormen Thursday, Friday night, Sunday mornings and all that. Rest of the week, they're unemployed. They're just sitting in a gym going, right? So if you needed anything done, you had the normal layman in the street might not know where to get someone to bash up his daughter's boyfriend that's just beat her up, throw your next-door neighbour out, get a squatter out, repossess a car. They might not know that, but you know that doorman knows a load of hard nuts like that. So I became a job centre for a million other naughty men up and down the country.
So you,
that is what propelled me into the importance of what they now say is celebrity gangster. Yeah, and it brought me to the attention of Ronnie and Reggie Cray that then wanted to see me because I had a million geezers working for me.
So you started out, was it, when at the beginning, was it just door work or was it always...
It was just door work. And petty crime.
Okay, so what would the petty crime have been?
Well, petty crime would be all and everything, right? You might not, you know, there's crimes that, most of the crimes you might plan to do, but if you're that way inclined, you're an opportunist and your way of handling situations in your life are a lot different than the normal person. You know, a banker might not do the same to his next door neighbour that keeps having parties as a doorman. Yeah, a banker might call the police, a doorman would get his mates and go in there and kick the living daylights out of him and smash his stereo up. My job was debt collecting, which was very easy for me for once again to put my Robin Hood hat on. Yeah, he owed him half a million quid. And I didn't care what methods I used to go in there and get it back. He was still the bad guy. I weren't robbing him. I weren't just running in there and nicking $500,000 off him. He would actually say I was the devil himself, and someone else, when he got his money back, would call me God.
Mm. Right? Were they the amounts you'd be working with?
I'd be working for millions.
Really?
Millions. Oh. And before I became infamous and got on telly, it was as easy as this. You could just kick someone's front door down and you run in and do whatever you had to do, which then became illegal by the police, to do what you had to do to get the money back, you know? And if I've nicked £500,000 off someone or gone bankrupt and just changed the name on the top and, you know, you would have to go to some lengths to make me give you back £500,000, mate. You'd have to cut my leg off. I'd get a gold wheel, right, if I had £500,000. But then once I became infamous on the Creator Impro at the funeral, I did that job truly thinking it was going to propel me into some working security icon genius. You know, I'll have the best jobs in the world. It's going to be viewed and publicised to everybody in the world. And I took it on board that I had to go and get 150 of the tastiest men I knew out of my whole Filofax. And I'm known as the Yellow Pages of the Underworld. That's what it is. My head is full of numbers, not crimes, you know. And I've got Mr. Glasgow, Mr. Edinburgh, Mr. Manchester, Mr. Newcastle, Mr. Leeds, Mr. Liverpool. I had a firm, Dad, 150 men.
Was this for security?
The security for Ronnie Craig's funeral, yeah.
And how did that come about? How were you asked to do it?
Well, by the time he died, I was a good friend of both of them.
Okay. I was
their legs and arms while I was in there for their last 15, 20 years of their life. Yeah, they got in touch with me and I went down to see them for a load of different reasons. I was going out of a girl that was an identical twin. They were rappers. They made a song called They Took the Rap about the Cray Twins, and it was done by a set of twins, and they led the Cray Twin March through London, and I went down there to sort out contracts money out of this record. They wanted to know who was doing what in London with this biggest firm that there was, and I was easily impressed. And at a young man, being associated with the Cray Twins and the Richardsons and all that was very, very beneficial to me.
And was it? So obviously, at the point you met them, they were massively famous.
Massively famous, but they was in prison.
But were they intimidating to meet?
Intimidating to meet? No, their reputation was fantastic. Mm. You know, if anyone had ever met them when they was in prison, I'm afraid they're intimidating was the last. Oh, hold on, I'm going to rewind that.
Okay.
Ronnie was a bit intimidating because he was mad. Mm. The thing that really, really affected me with Ronnie weren't the things he said and all that, which was quite unique as well, is he never, ever blinked.
Wow.
Because he'd had 30 years in prison, and for the first 20 years of his prison, they left the light on all the time in his cell, the fluorescent lights. When they first come out, they weren't as eyeball friendly as they are now. So he'd had fluorescent lights on, so he would talk to you constantly like that. Hello, David. Have you bought something for me to eat? Would you go to the canteen and buy me some things?
God.
It's nice to see you. You know, and he never ever blinked, and that used to make you go, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Well,
a lot of people say, you know, Ronnie was mad, and, you know, when you look back at that, What do you think that was? Like, do you think he actually had something?
Yeah, there was something definitely wrong with him. Yeah, he was a bona fide, clarified, stamped, paranoid schizophrenic.
Right.
And he was in charge of the firm, so it was only ever going fucking downhill, you know what I mean? It was, Reggie was more of a businessman, the more happy-go-lucky, friendly fella, you know what I mean? Their sexuality has got nothing to do with it whatsoever. Some of the tastiest, most violent, scary men I know are actually gay, but they were both full-on gay from the start. Roddy would get the ump if anyone said nothing, you know, and was more open with it. And ended up shooting someone in the head because he called him gay. Mm. Reggie didn't tell anyone about it and married somebody and didn't fuck her for a year, so she killed herself, you understand what I mean? And now, I'm not making these things up. Mm-hmm. I don't come on this program and say things that were wrong or I'd end up with an hole in me. I'm telling you how it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah? But they run their little bit of East London and run it with an iron fist and done it really well and went for the glamour as I did. Yeah, got very, very famous, but there was an awful lot of other naughtier firms in London than the Cray twins, I'm afraid. Mm. Yeah, there was Freddie Foreman and the Richardsons on this side of the water, on the other side of the water. Yeah, there was the Nashies over here in you know, there was an awful lot of other families that were just as notorious or as naughty as them, but didn't do the... I don't really want to be on the telly. They couldn't wait to get in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They couldn't...
And was it when you're saying there was lots of these firms all over the place in London, would they... What was the relationships like? Were they warring or were they...
Did they sometimes good, sometimes bad. It was a bit volatile. You know what I mean? They'd just come out of a war. There was beautiful criminal morals among the British criminal fraternity. Mm-hmm. It was almost romantic then. You know, we've just come out of a war. Everyone went, loose lips sink ships, walls have ears. One spy is more dangerous than 10,000 men. So if you was a policeman at the time, trying to get somebody to grass somebody up was hard work because the whole world had grown up with them morals. You know what I mean? You could leave your front door with a key hanging on a bit of string through the letterbox. Mm. You know, if you would have said to someone then, there's going to be a programme on telly in 25 years' time where they're going just for grasses to say, and if you see this man, just ring us up and we'll put his face on telly and we'll send you some money. Oh, and if you see this man as well, you know, we've had two phone calls. If you told me there'd be a programme like that and a grass line for anyone you know with car tax or anyone's working and not work. Claiming it, anyone's got a gun in their ass, one of them sells drugs. Every time you're at the newspaper, there's a grass line for something else.
What were the kind of clubs that you and your firm...
I'd had all of them.
Yeah, all the big UK ones.
All the big UK ones, yeah. The Ministry, I'd done all of them. So did an awful lot of other doormen do them in the end. But my doorman was ended up, I fenced them out to people and they ended up working everywhere, every main club in definitely London and up and down Great Britain, all the festivals, all the football. You know, as soon as the E's came in, a club that normally would have six doormen had 26.
Right. Yeah. And what, like, just going into some of the details of it, you know, like, what were some of the more dangerous clubs and what were some of the most dangerous things that could possibly happen? Like, is a fight as far as it went or were there possible shootings on evenings?
No. There was two sides to it. There was the one that was on show in the nightclub itself, the little show of force and the, you know, whatever's happening and that. And a lot of people, a little drive-by, I suppose, is the worst you would actually get. And then there was the clever people that mended it out of club hours, right? No owner wanted the nightclub fights and deaths and stabbings. Mm-hmm. And even if the doorman won the confrontation, the police knew about it. They didn't need that. So it'd be better to find out who's who. Men were silly enough to actually go out firm-handed and bring out everyone they actually had on their firm, so you knew who they all were. You had all the registration numbers of their cars. And if you were a clever you would go around and mend that in their house at 7 in the morning.
Oh, so when you say mend it, right, okay.
Headboard while they're lying there in bed with three of you in a balaclava, that normally changes the game.
Right.
Yeah? Listen, shut up, love. Shut up. I'm talking to you about you selling the gear. Shut up. I'm talking to you about selling the gear, yeah? Listen to me. Right? That's normally a game changer. Right? Instead of running past someone's nightclub and taking a shot at the window and driving off, right? Please.
And when you say taking a shot there, were guns prevalent?
Guns were, they... You're actually fighting for the domination of the drug selling in that club, which might end up being sometimes 50 to 100 grand a week. Mm. So I'm afraid the fighting you had to do is no longer knuckle dusters and if you have 10 doormen instead of 5 or... You know, you're fighting for thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. So I'm afraid up goes the level of violence and that is a part of a tool of your trade. Where I used to be, I'd have a knuckle duster on me. I now have to employ someone to walk around and carry that. I don't.
So you never carried guns? Next question.
Of course I have.
Yeah.
I'm in charge. I don't have to. He does.
Well, I've got you. Okay. Yeah? Understood. Were there any times where you thought you were in?
A million times. I've got holes in me, mate.
So you've been shot.
I've got holes in my.
Can you tell us about that? What happened?
Yeah. I was. I hate this. I was standing outside a nightclub and the geezer pulled up on the driveway. Shooting someone's very hard. You think it's quite easy. You've only got to aim it and you'll get it more or less. A whole person, you think, I ain't going to miss that from 20 foot, but you do. You do, especially if they're running and moving about, you know. And someone went, Dave Courtney in the yellow Escort Mexico with a black vinyl roof. And I was too far away to get. But I went, yeah. And I walked, don't. I walked right up to the window of the geezer that was going to shoot me.
Oh, wow.
That's exactly what I thought.
So he just called you over?
Yeah. And as I was bending down to see his face, I see him pull the gun up. And then when anything like life-threatening comes into play, for some reason, everything goes into slow motion.
Mm.
So I'm going to explain something to you now. It's going to take me about 5 minutes, which happened as quick as this. As soon as I looked in the window and I was close enough, he went, poof, and shot me in the leg. That's how quick it was. In my head, as I come to the window and started bend down to have a look, I saw it, and he was bringing it up, and I thought, oh, no. So I'm now trying to sort of jump, and I thought, I ain't even going to get out of the way quick enough. What am I going to do? And as he's coming down to go like that, poof, in slow motion, it's going, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get me in the forehead. Oh, no. Right, then he's going down, it's like in the art, and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get me, I'm going to get down in the art. And then he's going, oh, no, I'm going to get in the box. I'm going to be getting in the box. And then I thought, jump over the car, Dave. Like, I don't know why. Yeah, jump. So I tried to jump. And then as I went to jump up, he went, poof, and got me in the leg. And what it felt like, nothing like on telly where you go, ah, I'm only slowing you down, man. You go on with that. It's nothing like that. It's not like that. It felt like someone come up behind me with a big sledgehammer and went, whoosh, on my ankle. Because it hit my ankle and it turned my ankle right up in here, upside down, and I came down and landed on my face. And I was unconscious there for a minute until the ambulance pulled right up beside my head. And they've got their horns right underneath the actual thing. And right when it pulled up beside me, it went, did-did! Like that. It's what woke me up. Well. You know,
and then he intentionally shot you in.
He wasn't trying to kill you. No.
So why do?
Why was that? It's because his boss was going to have a lot of trouble with my boss, and before he had to go with my boss, he had to get rid of me.
Mm.
As I would have done anything I was told or paid to do when I was on the up and up. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, and you know, it's all down to, it's not who's the hardest or the toughest anymore. That's really not it. It's who's got the numbers in the phone.
Right.
And yeah, that really is what it's all about. Not the biggest gangster, no, none of that. All down to that.
Mm.
Right. I'm a dangerous man. I don't care. This is most of the cockiest thing I'll say to you. I don't care what bit of trouble I'm in, what country I'm in, or whoever it's against. If you let me get to my phone, I will f*** you. Right? That's true. Not me, not I'm the toughest, not nothing to do with that. And there's people out there with my name in their phone. Right? And if you was in trouble, you could ring me. And if I couldn't do it, I could ring him. And if he can't do it, he gets them.
Mm.
Right? So it's not what you can do that minute and there, it's what you can get.
And
that's what that was about. This man who was going to get it could get me. So before they got him, they made sure I was out of the game.
Mm.
Not dead. We're going to drive by killing, you know, actually killing someone. The murder hunt is horrifying. If you've ever been involved in one, it goes on for months. They interview you, your school teacher, who you fell out with in infants, your next door neighbor, who you rung 3 years ago. Why did you ring? It's a, you know, I think murder is the highest rate of captures of any other crime in the world. I mean, they catch something like 97% of every murder.
Right.
I don't think I'm far wrong there. It might be 95% of every murder there is.
Mm.
You know, everything else is down in the 18-21% and all that. But murder, so people have now learned that you don't murder. This has come all the way from Eastern Bloc people. What we've learned from them is you do not leave a body to be found for murder.
Mm.
People just go on the missing persons list.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you'd like to go and do your maths or get your researchers to have a look, the missing persons list is right up there. Yeah? murders might be going above or a little bit more than last month and all that. But on the missing persons list, which don't even make the local paper, so-and-so didn't come home last night. And they were fined when they're doing the investigating. So many reasons he shouldn't have come home. He was on drugs, he was hanging around with them, he had another bird. No one's even looking. Mm. So now to go and pay someone to get to murder someone is a lot of money when I was a young man. It cost you 15, 20 G to go and get someone shot. And they left the body there. Right? Now it costs you 7 G to go and have someone took away and never ever seen again. Mm. Yeah, there's a whole different set of people here doing that work. So that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. There is no murder hunt. Mm. The person who paid for it to get done as much will be helping the wife looking for him.
Oh, God. Yeah. And so when something like that happened to you, that obviously for most people getting shot would have been like a sort of life-defining event, but like did you get...
I didn't win the three-legged race.
No, but were you angry? Did you want revenge? Or for you was like...
I didn't know what it was about at first.
Right.
You know, revenge weren't it. I was just lucky it was there and not anywhere else, yeah. You know, and there was an awful lot of other people getting shot at the time, so... You know, it didn't change my life. I'm going to change my whole life because that happened. Mm. You're now in it. It is your associate. You are that. You are now naughty.
And if you...
You're in a family of naughty people.
But they shot you because you worked for someone else. Is there any sort of like compensation in that world? Like, do they go, oh, you've been shot, so we're going to give you this money?
Because... You are lovely, you are.
Okay, right.
Honestly.
Fine. Worth checking.
I'm actually going to write that down and I'm going to put that out there just as a little memo. Is there any compensation?
Do you know what I mean, though? Like, you've taken a bullet in the line for someone else.
No. If you're silly enough to, and you've got enough time, and you just want to go and waste your negative energy on revenge and running around doing that, there's a million people you could shoot for a million different reasons. And if you've got 2,000 people working for you, keeping myself out of trouble is easy. Mm. It's easy. Let me tell you something now, right? Now I'm no longer doing anything active and all that. That knuckle duster I carry with me is purely a prop and all things like that. Right? It's keeping myself out of trouble is easy, but I've got people that have worked for me for 30 years. Mm. They've got holes in their body down to me. They've been to prison for me. Right? So when they knock at my door tonight and go, Dave, help me, I just caught my wife shagging the neighbour, I've killed him and I want to get out of the country, help me, what do I do? Sorry, I'm writing books now, I'm on telly, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Do I?
You know what's on everyone's wish list this year?
Oh, definitely the Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
It's like having a bartender who never judges your drink order.
Exactly. Just pop in a capsule, press a button, boom. Old fashioned, margarita, espresso martini.
Over 60 bar quality cocktails. Zero effort.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian Cocktail Makers.
Wait, 150?
Yep, up to $150 off. It's the best deal of the season.
Okay, but seriously, how did we ever host before Bartesian?
Last time your kitchen looked like a crime scene. Sticky counters, fruit wedges everywhere.
Yeah, this year, no measuring tools, no mess, just perfect cocktails.
This year, I'm gifting one to my brother.
And myself, for research purposes.
Make the holidays easier and happier with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium cocktails at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. But hurry, this Black Friday and Cyber Monday offer ends December 2nd. Get yours now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
It's hard, isn't it? Or do I make a phone call and help him? Mm. And then I'm back in it. And because the police know that that's in, they're on my phone, my house, they film my house, they're on my, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm keeping me out of trouble. It's easy. It's just everyone else knocking on my door going, Dave. Mm. And I can't go because I'm a nice fella, really. No. So they just wait for the time where they can catch me doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So they still listen on my phone.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you were sort of like brought to sort of national attention after the Craze funeral.
Yeah.
And you use the term, I think I've heard you say you don't like it, so I'm just saying you use the term celebrity gangster.
Yeah. Celebrity gangsters. I thought it was going to propel my security company into mega, you know.
Yeah.
But it actually brought me to the attention of the general public.
Yeah.
And to the attention of all of the authorities. And it came out that that was their very first visual proof of organised crime in this country.
Mm.
Yeah, one criminal organising every other criminal in Great Britain, because everyone I brought down had their own criminal CV, their own little firms. A lot of these firms didn't get on with each other. But on that one said day where we're burying the actual monarch of the underworld, Ronnie Gray, they all got on, they all behaved. So it was one criminal organising every other criminal in England to come down to one place, be seen, not hiding up alleys with a collar up, going, no pictures, no comment, doing that, right, for the burial of a super criminal. You know, it was the first sign of organised crime they'd ever, my God, yeah? I didn't actually, weren't clever enough to be thinking that. I'm thinking, right, you know, I'll show off here. Mm. Everyone in England and America want to have a look at what the British crime thing's doing. I'll give them something to look at. I'm a bit like that. But not realising what the authorities were going to think of that. And from that day on, it destroyed me.
Right.
It actually destroyed Dave Courtney. I could no longer kick someone's door down and run in and do debt collecting or anything, because everyone went, it was Dave Courtney, I know him. I've seen him on telly. Yesterday, it was just some English skinhead. I could, every time I went into the bank to go and pay in a cheque before I got to the counter, they went, I couldn't no longer do nothing. So I then became, in the newspapers, heir to the throne, celebrity gangster, and I didn't actually want that. So I quickly had to think of something to do that was just as public, that took me off of that super gangster thing. You understand what I mean? No gangster runs off into the sunset and lives happily ever after. Or it just don't work. You end up with another couple of holes in you didn't want, or 35 years wrapped around you. Mm. So I wrote a book quickly and called it Stop the Ride, I Want to Get Off. Yeah, which is really it. And seeing everything I then did became newsworthy, whether I wanted to or not, they're writing about me, taking pictures of me and all that super gangster, celebrity gangster. I thought, right, I'll either sit down and try and hide down a little alley in Essex, wear a brown tweed suit and try and hide from this, or seeing as they're doing loads of press on me anyway, jump up, take it by the horns and steer it into whatever way I could. Do it on a celebrity thing, I'm not that anymore, but blah, 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 which didn't go down well with some people, because most naughty men and villains and criminals were, the rule was, no pictures, no comment, meet down an alley, collar up, low-key car. And there's me going, da, 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 da. Yeah, but I was no. By the time I'm doing that, I'm no longer at it. So by the time people knew I was celebrity gangster, I no longer was. I'm not telling anyone I was a gangster. I'm saying I knew a lot. Yeah, I might not be the right way for things to happen. And that, for me personally, I'm not the best fighter, the best shot. I've never said that. You know, no one can plastic gangster and all that. The best one I heard on the other day. Poundland gangster, they think that was.
Poundland right, okay.
Gangster. I love that. A bendy Dave, I like that.
But you had like, I mean, you became a film star, you're in TV.
Well, I've done everything. I've done whatever they asked me to do then. Once my book became a number one bestseller, which shocked no one more than my English teacher, they then said, do another book about the rave scene. Right, my first book, Stop the Ride, I Want to Get Off, best book I ever wrote, because I never thought I was going to write another one. Mm. I've just done it to go, look, I ain't doing that anymore. Right? You know, they went to every single club I had a doorman and denied it and went, if you employed Dave Courtney's doorman, you won't have a licence for a fucking television, mate. So sack him today. Right? Everyone I was doing my walk round audience with shows, they went there and said, I don't want Courtney and his boys meeting in your pub. Right? You're coming up for your licence in 4 weeks, cancel it.
All right.
I went to the magazine where I was a crime writer and all that and said, get rid of him.
Why do you think they did that?
Well, because the popularity was what was killing them. You understand what I mean? I was running for Lord Mayor once. I ran for Lord Mayor of London once.
Wow, did you? I didn't know that.
No, look, you don't know, look at you. But, I'm only joking. I'm doing this to make you look laugh out there. I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah, I ran for Lord Mayor once. And... You know, I'm not saying anyone was going to vote Ken Livingstone and change their mind about Dave Courtney. Mm. But I think there's only something like 12% of the vote for London Lord Mayor. Mm. And at the time, I had a magazine circulation, the Front magazine, where I had thousands of followers. I was putting on raves up and down the country where I was getting thousands of people to go to raves and pay 50 quid to get in. So to go and get a couple of 100,000 people to come down to a polling station and do that for absolutely nothing, I became Lord Mayor, and that frightened them.
Right.
It actually frightened them seriously. You know what I mean? The Lord Mayor's in charge of the Metropolitan Police. Mm. I'd have given him a year off. I'd have made them all wear their noses with the moustache. I'm in charge.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That absolutely terrified them. And while all that was going on, you know, I'd strangely then got run over by a mysterious man on the M25, on the A2, in the middle of the night, not drunk, hit while I was in a Range Rover. No one... And I was pit manoeuvred. Now, I don't know any other gangster in the world that has tried to kill any other gangster in the world doing a pit manoeuvre. I don't know anyone.
What's a pit manoeuvre?
I love you. You're beautiful. A pit manoeuvre is a manoeuvre that the police use when they're chasing someone and they ping them stop them. It's called a pit manoeuvre.
Okay.
Only the police do it. We don't. You know, I can think of a million different ways to shoot you rather than wait till you're on the M2 on camera doing 100 mile an hour and do that, right? But that happened to me. I ended up going in hospital. I was in a coma for 7 months. I was in hospital. And when I come out, they said all of the film footage of the A2 wasn't on that night.
Wow.
So I couldn't catch it, right? And luckily for me, they said, there was an undercover, there was an off-duty policeman following me that took down all 13 witness statements. But because I was in a coma, if Mr. Courtney doesn't understand office environment, things do get lost and all the witness statements are lost.
So what do you think that was?
What do you think that was?
What do you think?
While I'm actually arresting and I've nicked the police, they've actually called me a grass. I went to court with a bent policeman that I've been paying for years and years. And I'm afraid when I was a criminal, if you didn't have a bent copper, you're a fool. Everyone had one, right. You know what I mean? They all had one. And when A1 got caught, he didn't say, yes, I'm working for Dave for the last 15 years, because there'd be all retrials, compensation on it. He said, I was working for him, which, had it been believed, would have got me shot. But it did cause me a lot of heartache and a lot of pain and stopped the popularity thing. And they run around for 8 months while the court case was going on, saying Courtney might be a grass, Courtney might be a grass, which still hurts, but it weren't proved. I actually got not guilty. This is my sexiest day as a criminal. Forgive me if you see a little lump on my trousers. Forgive me. I went to the Old Bailey and got not guilty, and the copper got a five. Stop it. I got not guilty. I'll say it one more time. I got not guilty, and the copper got a five. Now, my biggest day, crime-wise, you know. And after that, I then took out a private summons at the High Court of Justice with Bill Murray, the bloke who played the bent copper in the Bill, and Martin Brunt filmed it for Sky and said, look, right, well, I'm nicking the police for attempted murder. You called me a grass when you know, and it was proved I wasn't. I actually bugged the copper and handed them the tape.
Wow.
I had the, you know, so they knew, but the day I got arrested, I gave it to them, but they continually said, Courtney might be a grass, Courtney might be a grass, Courtney might be a grass, right up till the day the court case started. Then he went guilty and said, no, it was me. So for 8 months, while I was, instead of being, oh, Mr. Popular, doing the raves, doing the parties, writing the books, running for Lord Mayor, they stopped all that and went, it could be a grass, could be a grass, could be a grass. Stopped all of that, got sacked from the doorman. And then on that day that it was proved I wasn't and the couple went to prison, they just didn't put on the telly.
Right.
You know?
So that was
actually made me do something while all that was going on. I was so frustrated with the fact that he was calling me an informant. On one of the court cases that we was going up to court, I had said to him, if you put me in the dock with him, if you put me within arm's reach of him, I will chin him. And I've got that all on tape so that they did believe it, because while we were going to magistrates, they put him on in the morning and me on in the afternoon, him in the morning, me on in the afternoon. And then one day, because they were going, Courtney might be a grass, Courtney might be a grass, and I could see the popularity thing hurting me, and it was hurting me, I went to court dressed as a court jester, with all of the bells and the things, and I brought 40 of my mates all dressed in black, and I went into court, and as I went into court to go and say, look, it is a joke, I shouldn't be here, you know, blah, 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 he was coming out. So I chinned him, and I knocked him out in court. It was all on 10 o'clock news.
Oh, my God, really?
Forget I'm a God stuff. Just call me Dave. Dave.
So you're just in front of all the cameras?
In front of everything. I tuned him, yeah.
Dressed as a jester?
Happening again, wait. dressed as a court jester, I knocked him out. It's on the 10 o'clock news. You can go and have a look at it. And I gave a little speech afterwards, blah, blah, blah. And I've done audience with, you know, all around the world. I've been to Sicily to talk to the mafia with 25 mafia men and 5 interpreters going, there's an unwritten rule book about going to court, and everyone in the world knows it, right? It's unwritten. It's one is you do not bring all your friends, you wear a nice suit, and it's yes or no, sir, and a letter from someone that's known you 20 years saying you're a nice bloke. They're the rules of going to court for everyone, right? The only people that don't do that are the Cosa Nostra. Because they know it's John Gotti. What's the point of him turn up and go, I'm a nice bloke? So they turn up to call gangster. He said, the only one we've ever seen do that is you. Tell me what was going in your head that day. And so I've been out there and done talks for them, and I've now travelled the world explaining why I did what I did that day. But I was so frustrated at what they were doing to me. You know what I mean? I knew I was getting not guilty. They knew I was getting not guilty. They had the tape of me doing him, but they allowed all this to be written in the press just to hurt me. And on the very day the court case started, he went, okay, guilty. And it did stop me. I never got voted in, lucky for Ken Livingstone. You know, and it did slow down a lot of it. And I did lose a dorm, and it did actually hurt me. But I'm still here to tell the tale. I'm not moaning about the sad bits. I've had an awful lot of good bits.
Well, when you say there you got found not guilty, how many times have you actually been sent to prison in your life?
I'm famous for getting not guilties. I've had over 20 not guilties.
Wow.
And the reason I could get away with the things then, before technology, ain't it great, is being very popular and having an awful lot of friends, the first rules in the Archibald's, the law book, is if there is any doubt whatsoever that you might be not guilty, they have to go not guilty. And if a policeman saw you shoot someone, but you could pull up 30 witnesses to say, no, we was with Dave, he heard a bang, ran over, picked up the gun, and then the couple ran over and grabbed him. If you had a policeman, a fireman, a soldier, or two nurses, or if you had 30 witnesses saying it weren't you, and prepared to go, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, not but the truth, so help me God, right? That's element of doubt. So you would be found not guilty. So I've had 20-odd not guilties due to people helping me. Now, you can't do that, because as soon as you pull up any witness, they check your Facebook. You can't have him, he's your best mate. You can't have him, he's your best mate. You can't have him, he's your best mate. And anyone that's close enough to you that would lie in court for you is on your Facebook, ain't it? Right? Now you can't do that no more. And I've had some blinding ones in court, man. Listen, I've had some absolute peaches in court. And sorry to show off here.
No, go on.
While I was actually in that court case with the copper, the whole gallery was packed. And as they're sentencing and they're giving him the 5 years and I'm getting not guilty, I'm looking at them, not realising the judge is on me. And I'm looking at them trying to emphasise the, told you, really doing it too much. You go and check all the court things. You mean, Mr. Courtney? He said, that look on your face could be mistaken as gloating. I said, Your Honour. I said, it's no mistake. Stop it.
But you're famous for not guilties, but am I right in thinking that you actually met Charles Bronson in prison?
No. I heard Charles Bronson in prison. I didn't meet him, I heard him. Yeah. I've been to prison, I suppose, if on remand, I've done 5.5 years, I suppose, on remand. I've done a year on remand, got not guilty, 8 months got not guilty, 6 months not guilty, one of the times I was in prison, although he's a good friend now, the very first time I ever heard Charles Bronson, I was in the special unit at Belmarsh, which is a prison built within a prison, for the 40 most criminally minded criminals in Great Britain. And it's a remand thing while they're waiting to get 50 years, 100 years, or whatever. And it's for people with the financial ability to get out, or the manpower, you know. And at the time, I had an army out there. And I was lying in bed. It was 2 o'clock. And this is a very good impression. I know Charlie very well. And I was lying in bed, and Dave Courtney coming in prison had just nicked a little bit of his thunder, I think. Nothing more than that. And I heard, Courtney. Ruined the way, I've got to tell you. Completely ruined the way. Where was that? Courtney. And I'm thinking, this is the truth. I remember it like yesterday. I thought the only chance I got is there might be someone in here called Courtney. But it might. He went, I'm going to bite an hole in your chest and suck the life out of you. Wow. I can't tell you. I'm telling you, stop calling me God, right? I'm going to expect everyone else to do it. But I'm telling you, once you heard, I was truly petrified, and I teach people, don't be frightened of someone's voice, don't be frightened on the phone, anyone can ring up and pray. Don't do that. But that done me. It completely done me. And now the whole prison is chatting to each other at the windows going, Bronson, stuck it on Bronson, Bronson, stuck it on Connie Winner. They're all talking to each other, and you can hear all the other 1,500 whispers go, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I was like, now, please. Now, I don't know at this time. He's in solitary confinement.
Mm.
And the chances of me ever bumping into him, I have more chance of genuinely bumping into the Queen.
Right.
That's the truth. I have more chance of me bumping into the Queen than I ever would chance of bumping into Charlie Bronson, who's in solitary confinement, who's locked up in a hole, in a thing. He's never seen anyone for 30 years. Now, I didn't know I weren't going to bump into him in the library, in the gym, down at church. Mm. I didn't know that, which might explain my next move.
Mm.
So I didn't know I weren't going to bump into him. So with that in mind, you know, they're all going, oh, cool. So I've come to the window and went, in my best South London gangster voice, Charlie, stop it. Charlie Wally, don't do it. Come on, it's me, Dave. Me arsehole fell out, right? I can't actually say no, it never, because there's 1,500 people that heard it. So I can't actually say anything else. Had I known I was never going to see him, I'd have gone, who are you fucking talking to, you mother? I'll have you tomorrow, had I known.
Mm.
But anyway, I never. He's become a very, very close friend of mine. He actually rings me every other day and sings to me now.
Wow.
You can put this in your show. I've put him up on the old website. He sings different songs to me all the time, every day. And so I've had two of his wedding receptions in my pubs and all that. You know, I think what's happened with Charlie is I'm not one of these people saying let him out. Yeah. I think the crime is this. You know, he might be a little bit... mental health at the moment and not enough to let out on the road, but he's definitely well enough to let out of solitary confinement. They have kept him in fucking solitary confinement for 30 years.
Mm.
Right? All everyone really should be saying is not let him out, is take him out of there and let him say hello to someone, let him say good morning to someone, let him say good night, let him stand beside someone and have a wee in the toilet, let him sit beside someone and watch telly, any normal thing. Yeah, just normal, you know, if he does something wrong again, then lock him up in solitary, but not to keep a man in a cupboard not talking to anyone.
Mm.
He does his exercise on his own, his dinner comes under, you know, he don't see anyone to do any, you know, even the hostage that he took hostage was stood up at the court case and went, I was in no physical danger, all he done is kept me there and spoke to me continually for 24 hours, you know. Mm. He just wanted to talk and get some reaction and chat and what colour wallpaper he got, man. Mm. He just wanted, you know, even the hostage, that he took hostage, went blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the screws that lock him up went, you know, he ain't no trouble down there, really. You know, we're not going against the problem. Yeah, all of the psychiatrists and mental people said, we're not saying let him out, but maybe just the locking up in the solitary might be a little bit wrong.
Mm.
Yeah, but someone at the Home Office went, no, keep him in there. Right, now, hear me with this. This is only my own personal reason for that, right? But cleverly, if I was them, they are doing that to one person, which is a bit wrong, morally, you know, right? But by doing that to that one man, they have kept every other prisoner in England under manners. So if you now want to start tearing up prison cells, climbing up on the roof, lighting fires, taking people hostage, they can go.
Mm.
Do you want to do that? Do you want us to do that to you? Do you want us to lock you up here forever, dick? Yeah, because we do and can. Look, he got 7 years. He's done 47. Right? Do you want that? And it, slows you down. If they start being nice and letting him out, they haven't actually got a deterrent or a threat.
Mm.
You understand? I mean, me personally, that's why I think the only possible reason, other than pure vindictive nastiness, and with the amount of public support he's got at the moment, you know, they might be shouting for too much of a touch, you know, let him out. Well, yeah, but like, wow, you've got to at least let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, but who am I?
So
I can't
example.
Think of any other reason that they would continually be so blatantly, openly spiteful and not worry about what the general public think and go, no, he's not doing it.
Mm.
You know, educate me if you would. If someone would like to tell me there is another reason, I'll grab that. I can't.
It makes sense. And like, look, over this conversation, we've talked about some like very famous British gangsters, you know, Bronson, the Craze, yourself, McLean, those kind of huge names. Like, do you think those kind of people who get films made about them, books written about them, TV series made about them, do you think they're still being created in the UK? Or do you think that was a period in time?
No, I'm afraid it's a period in time.
Yeah. What? Why?
Well, exactly the same as famous naughty men in the past is a historical thing, like cowboys, pirates, knights in shining armour, gangsters. It's all an old-fashioned thing. Anyone trying to be one of them, they're building prisons to put you in. Yeah? Like the individual Lenny McLeans. There ain't no doorman now that's known up and down the country. There ain't no bank robber that's so famous everyone in England knows them. There ain't no prize fighter that's on everyone's lips. There ain't no... You understand what I mean? Yeah, it's a romantic thing of the past. Like I said, you could almost stand up in an era once after a while and say in school, my dad's a criminal, my dad's a villain, and be proud of it.
Mm.
Now standing up and saying my dad's a drug dealer ain't got the same cut.
Mm.
Yeah, ain't the same.
So it's a period in history.
It's a period in history where, you know, I know they were naughty, but they're entitled, especially today that we're not like that no more, they're entitled to be heroised, you know what I mean, or wrote about or films about. They were a different breed that we are no longer. You know, like cavemen, cowboys. There's a different era of men that they don't make no more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the English criminal, you know, like running Bethnal Green was a lot easier then when there was only 50,000 people in Bethnal Green and everyone spoke and understood English for the Craze. Now 3/4 of them couldn't say the name Crackwit. Huh? You know, we all had the English criminals held human life at a certain standard. You know, the different nationalities that call this home now, it's not the same. You know, human life in Albania, Bosnia, Moscow, Afghanistan, you know, it isn't the same value. So the crimes and the what tools they're carrying and the values of life and honour among thieves is no longer there no more.
Yeah.
Right, there is honour among thieves, but there ain't no honour among drug dealing.
Mm.
You know what's on everyone's wish list this year?
Oh, definitely the Bartesian cocktail maker.
It's like having a bartender who never judges your drink order.
Exactly. Just pop in a capsule, press a button, boom. Old fashioned, margarita, espresso martini.
Over 60 bar quality cocktails. Zero effort.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers.
Wait, 150?
Yep, up to $150 off. It's the best deal of the season.
Okay, but seriously, how did we ever host before Bartesian?
Last time your kitchen looked like a crime scene. Sticky counters, fruit wedges everywhere.
Yeah, this year, no measuring tools, no mess, just perfect cocktails.
This year, I'm gifting one to my brother.
And myself, for research purposes.
Make the holidays easier and happier with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium cocktails at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. But hurry, this Black Friday and Cyber Monday offer ends December 2nd. Get yours now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
You know, I'm not saying I'm knocking it. Most of my friends are. I have been and still do take, you know. I'm not... Yeah, the rewards, the financial rewards are that much that you... It's too tempting not to.
Mm.
But I'm afraid with that much money, you are going to get an awful lot more people dying and getting hurt and going missing and being disloyal, grassing up and mm-hmm. about it. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess my final question for you, Dave, is, you know, when you look back over your life and obviously being a very colourful, interesting one, you know, what do you think your life's taught you? You know, what's something that you believe that you've become aware of that other people might not know through the experiences you've had?
Hold your family close. Hold your family close and stay true to you. Stay true to you. Don't be easily impressed, right? And be a little bit happier with what you've got instead of clambering for something else. Because it's the clambering for something else. Don't try and impress anybody. That's where bullies come from. Don't try and impress anybody with, I've got to get the money to get the better car. Be happy with the car you got. Right? You are in the wrong era now to be a G. You're in the wrong era. You're not competing against a Sherlock Holmes policeman no more. You're trying to beat fucking technology and you can't. Right? You can't judge. Before, being a good judge of character would keep you out of prison, but now your phone will grass you up, your sat nav will grass you up, the cameras on the traffic lights will judge, you know, you are f***ed. So find another way than crime to get on, or you're on a losing battle. That would be my advice.
Great, it makes complete sense. Listen, it's been a brilliant conversation.
Everyone's... Wish I could say the same.
Yeah. Final dig, appreciate that. Everyone's been laughing throughout at your withering takedowns of me, but I'll go back to host school. Thank you very much for coming in, Dave. Man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too.
Thanks, mate.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.